This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to the May 10th, 2021 For Your Benefit radio show. Today, myself, Bob Lines, and co-host John Elliott welcome our guest, John Gillick, certified financial planner, fellow seminar presenter, and actually master of many things with regards to money and common sense. Good morning.
Good morning, Bob.
Well,
good morning, John.
And hi, John. Hi, John. We got two Johns, John Gillick and John Elliott.
Well, you can refer to me as Jack if it gets too confusing.
Jack, I will mess that up if I have to change your name.
We'll just call him Elliott. It's easier.
Oh. Yeah, but then they'll think that's my first name, and I don't.
That's true.
All righty. So we were going to talk about what? We're going to talk about traditional IRAs, Roth. We're going to talk about TSP, Roth. And why don't we start at the basics? You know, what is a Roth IRA and as compared to a traditional IRA? I'll throw that out for general comments, gentlemen.
Actually, I'll dive in, Bob. So you have a traditional IRA, which, predates the Roth IRA. And those that participated in a traditional IRA, say prior to federal service, you could take a portion of your income, which, you know, for back in the day, I think it was around maybe $2,000, and it went up to, $3,000. It went up in increments as what you could put in, but then you would deduct it on the front page of your 1040. And I'm sure Bob can tell us right off the top of his head the numbered line for that. And that deduction got you your taxes back at tax time. And then along comes the Roth, which was actually created by the Taxpayer Relief Act of 1997. Now, not that smart. I did look that up. and actually, so in 1997, it was created allowing non-deductible contributions. So, and what I like folks to understand, especially what I'm out teaching, is you're not putting that on the front of your 1040. However, I'm sure in Bob's lifetime as a CPA, he's seen that happen. And you're not actually recording that anywhere. The custodian's reporting, some information about your Roth, but it's up to you, the taxpayer, to keep track of your contributions to Roth. And I think that's a key point that we'll get to as far as taxation. But a Roth allows you to put the same amount, dollar amount, into an IRA, but ultimately the earnings, as they grow tax deferred while you're working, the earnings are, in addition to the money you put in, which has already been taxed, become tax-free after age 59 and a half. And so that was the birth of the Roth, and then that blended over. And then we're going to talk about here in a bit of Roth TSP. But it's quite a handy tool in that you know what your taxes are now. Are you willing to pay those taxes? Basically take the money into your paycheck, into your bank account, stroke a check, put it into a Roth IRA where there's no direct tax deduction on your tax return. And then let it grow from that point, whatever it grows to in the future is completely tax-free. So you always get your principal back. And that's kind of the nice thing about Roth for younger folks, too, is that it's easy to justify a Roth for someone just starting out, because if they had to access the Roth, they could get at the original contributions, no tax, no penalty at any time. And so what's better, money sitting in a checking your bank account now at 0.01, or maybe going for a little better return in a Roth? Now, in a Roth, you could have it sitting in a fixed income account, but you know, if you put it into some good stocks, mutual funds, things like that, go for the better return. You get tax deferral. And if you have the ability or wherewithal to leave it until you're 59 and a half, when hopefully it's grown to a considerable amount, completely tax-free. So the traditional, you're putting in, you're deducting on your 1040, you get the tax deduction. You're getting some monies back in tax from that deduction. That money grows tax deferred. However, at the other end, 59 and a half, the entire account is fully taxable. And so the question again is, what's your tax situation now? What's your tax situation look like later? And And really, I think Roth is more about building flexibility into your retirement plan. And so folks ask, you know, class, you know, how much should I put in Roth? I said, well, number one, it should be a meaningful amount to your financial situation. And, you know, what's the downside of not having any Roth, an account that you can dip into without any tax consequence? And I'm sure we'll get into that here in a bit.
If you're going to, if you're talking to a client and or teaching the class, oftentimes I found them, well, it's not tax deductible. And I go, well, sometimes you give up a tax deductible position for long-term growth with no tax. You can't grow with the other one and be at the finish line ahead of the game.
Yeah, and I think there's that old saying, Bob, and I'm sure you've heard it, you know, with your investments, don't get blinded by taxes. You know, it's more of a holistic look of, you know, where are you going to be out of retirement? How much do you want this money to be worth? And it's I always go through that saying, it's the money that money makes that makes more money. You have to say that really fast a few times to get used to it, right? But it's, you're working, it's the money you're putting in, you want it to grow as much as possible.
And sounds to me like the vast majority of employees should choose a Roth over a traditional. I mean, are there any exceptions? And I think they would be a decided minority of people.
It's hard to say. I mean, when you look at the actual tax brackets themselves currently, and we know that, I don't think it's a big secret that they should be going up in the not too distant future. And as I said to the few of you before that we got on, there's easy to find economic slides out there. You can go to JP Morgan and look at their guide to the markets. But you look at that and you realize that for personal income taxation, we're still at the lowest rate since 1950. You know, we've seen high taxation in the country. I was glad to see the bump up at the high end to 49.6 is the recommended, not 90%, which it was back in the Reagan years when he was making movies. And I shouldn't say in his presidential years. And Bob probably remembers that story of Reagan being, you know, interviewed and saying, hey, the reason I only make two movies a year is if I made a third movie, the federal government would take 90% at my highest bracket and the state of California would be nice enough to take the rest.
That's
so
true.
I don't work for free. I don't know about you. So higher taxation is on the horizon. It's just trillions and trillions of dollars have to be paid back. And you've got $5 trillion from the prior administration. You've got $1.9 trillion under this administration, another $2.2 trillion when they vet out what infrastructure means, and then another $1.5 trillion, I believe it is, for the American Families Plan. And as I said to, you know, Bob and John ahead of this, us going live, is, you know, one stack of $1 trillion on your table is 10 piles of $100 billion. And you're talking about 10 times that amount. It's such a staggering amount of money. When folks ask me if I'm worried about the stock market, I go, I'm not worried about the stock market. I'm worried about inflation. And as I said ahead of the show, you know, I just went to Home Depot to get one sheet of plywood, which I didn't buy because there's something in every grain of my body that prevents me from paying $75 for a sheet of plywood, right? Which, you know, all the sheets of plywood were $75. It didn't matter what thickness, what size. I mean, just they were all $75. So inflation, I think, is one of the bigger concerns. But at some point in time, the money has to be paid back. Taxes most likely could be higher. And I think that's why, you know, back when I talked to our folks that said these shows up, you know, Roth versus traditional, I think you're right, Bob. I think, you know, who doesn't it apply to? Who is not going to see an increase in taxes in the future? I think everyone is. And so having a pocket of money when you get to retirement that's not taxable, I think, is going to be key to planning, period.
John Jay, when you meet with your younger clients, if you will, and they go, well, I want the tax deduction now because I can get it because my income's below whatever the threshold is before I get cut off with the tax deduction, how do you gently coach them away from that thinking?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I've been saying this more and more as I teach. It's the millennials kind of amazed me a few years back. I jokingly said, as someone said, well, you know, what are your plans to work with millennials? I said, it isn't. It's to retire before I have to. And as I've gotten more and more millennials on board that I work with, The millennials don't want to work forever. And very typically, if you talk to a millennial, that's, and I'm not talking about the ones that are still in the basement playing video games. I mean, I get all that, but I'm talking about the ones that are in the workforce that are saying, listen, I don't want to be like my parents, John, or we don't want to be like our parents. We don't want to work until we're 65 and miss out on life. We want to experience it. What do we need to do to get retired at 50, 55? And John will smile because, he knew my dad. And CSRS, what age do they go out? And if you ask a large group of vets that, everybody in the room that knows says 55. That's when people retire. And so the millennials, to get retired at 50 or 55, I just say to them, is it going to be easier to live in retirement if you have a large lump sum of tax-free money or money that could be taxed at any level? You don't know what it is. And I think that's the biggest issue with anyone with large TSPs, pre-tax, IRAs, pre-tax, 401ks, 403bs, 457s, is that the devil that right now is the tax table. You can print it out today. That's your tax reality today. What's it going to be in 15 or 20 or 25 years when we've got to pay all this money back? And how does the money get paid back? Higher taxes. And so that's really the rub here is that when you talk to the folks that are just starting out, it's easy to get them to see the light of, hey, no tax is how I want to go. And I have a lot of folks, and even, and it's interesting, I mean, just entry level, mid-career, but most of the folks that I've come into contact with in their late career, I have 100% switched over to their entire contribution into Roth because they've got the ability to pay the taxes to get that lump sum in. And again, if they're going to leave that Roth for much later, and we'll get into, I guess, the tax benefits of doing that too, on the distribution side. That's what we're seeing right now, because if you get to the goal line and you just have your pension, your Social Security, and you have all pre-tax money, if you want to take that extra nice cruise that comes along for a great deal, and you're straddling the line, say between 24% federal and what's the next bump up, Bob? 32?
32, yeah. Well, no, 28. 28's in there. I believe 28 is in there.
Yes, you got the next bump up, from one to the other. So you got, yes, no, it's 20, 12, 22. Well, it goes 10, 10, which that's everyone has 10, right? 12%, 22, 24, 32. And then you go from 32 up to at least 35, and then on to infinity and beyond from that point, but not above 50. So you have, taxes that are relatively high, so it's kind of nice to have that Roth if you had some excess spending you needed to do to be able to pull from without having to pay any tax on it.
Your comment about tax bracket, of course, that's what I do when people call. I don't go near your world investing. I'm the world's worst investor. I understand it. I just can't. I don't practice. You buy it at 9:30, and if it doesn't double by 12, you send it and sell it. But if we come back to the tax side, I'm surprised over the spectrum, people that really don't know finances to people that do, they don't fully appreciate the tax bracket because you make X dollars and you go through generally the lower bracket and the next lower bracket. Then if you live in a state with a state income tax, it's a double. I won't call it a whammy, but when you say, okay, so if you take, $1,000 out of one of these accounts, you're going to lose 33, excuse me, you're going to be taxed on 33% of it. I won't say it's not a losing situation, it's just not your best financial situation. So, John Jay, how do you then approach those folks from a tax perspective, more importantly, an economic, but the one, it's hand in glove. If it makes economic sense, it probably should make tax sense.
Condense that down for me, Bob.
How do you tell somebody, okay, you're in an X percent tax bracket, and they say, yeah, I'm going to buy a house and I'm going to get a large mortgage on it because it's tax deductible, and you go, okay, if this is your tax bracket, federal and state, and you spend X dollars on a mortgage, yeah, you save the taxes on it, but did you incur a liability that maybe it'd be better to take it a notch down and invest the difference?
Yeah, and that's again, that's where you and I, we have to draw the line in the sand in our own professions and say, hey, I've got to get your CPA on the phone with us And when I hear, well, I don't use a CPA, I do a paper copy, I do one of the online services, I go to a tax prep company, I'm like, okay, well, now you're in the world of, we've got to have some solid tax advice, some competent tax advice. And when I lead off teaching now, I actually will use a slide that I've created with three circles, one with a CPA, one with a financial planner, and one with an attorney. And then I highlight the sweet spot in the middle. But, you know, I would contend that if Bob and I get together with anyone, federal or non-federal, and then we combine our strength with an attorney and we're on a Zoom call talking about you, the client or the prospect, we just saved you in that phone call over your lifetime, not just thousands or tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of dollars in mistakes that now will not happen and taxation that will not happen because you've got professionals looking at it. And I think that's one thing that, you know, I carry forward is, I mean, I love your question, but we'd have to have a 10-hour radio show with charts and graphs and video and to really be able to dissect some of these questions, right? Because what is the right path? That's what CPAs get paid to do. That's what financial planners get paid to do. You know, combine resources and figure out the best path for someone. And the same thing, Bob, we hear it all the time, you know, and especially teaching class. Well, when I retire, I'm going to take a lump sum out of my TSP and I'm going to pay off that pesky mortgage. It's probably one of the worst things you could ever do out of a pre-tax account. And I know I've used the example with you too before. I carried the Chinese finger handcuffs to get them off of Amazon with me. You remember from the state fair when you were a kid or the county fair and the carnival. You put your fingers in the first time, you pull your fingers
and pull
out.
Your fingers
get stuck
out, but you can't.
Yeah, right. You get stuck, right?
Right.
Well, these retirement accounts are the same way. And if you look at any tax table and you explain to folks, listen, if you take out $68,000 to pay off your mortgage, and you're 24% federal, and you've got another 6 to 7% for state, right, and local, and you divide by the reverse of that up, it's not 68 grand. It's over 100.
Right.
And you're going to crush your future retirement account growth. Yeah, your house will be paid off. It would have been paid off eventually anyways. You eliminate whatever tax deductions left of that low of a mortgage because it's all front-end loaded interest. We know that. But, you know, that's the question. I mean, I have to talk to your CPA to find out, are you even getting that deduction? Are you itemizing? Are you taking a standard deduction? So there's a lot of questions that come out of that. And, you know, try getting in front of a group of, you know, 30 or 100 feds and trying to, you know, do individual examples. It's a nightmare, right?
Right.
Because you have to have that data. You have to have the information. But taking a large lump sum out, I mean, the harder you pull, and that's to the point where now at the end, I know we had the Secure Act. I'll just bring it up now. With COVID and everything that's happened, folks have just completely missed out on this thing called the Secure Act. You don't hear it in the news. You're not hearing any airplay on it. But if you're curious as to how few people have the information, just ask someone, hey, what is that age when you have to take a distribution from your retirement accounts? 9 out of 10 feds will say 70 and a half.
Right.
Right. That's a fact. And you run into folks daily that, well, isn't it 70 and a half you have to do? No. Yeah.
No, they get me in class. I don't think you're right with that.
No, they don't think you're right.
Anyway, Andrew's saying, you guys are going to get it right. We have a commercial to do. The good folks at WAPA that sponsored the show, we should listen to them.
Over 46,000 feds choose WAPA to be there for their life's biggest moments. Group term life insurance is a smart option if you're looking for coverage that'll help meet your changing needs. At WAPA, eligible employees can apply for up to $1.5 million in life insurance regardless of salary. We also offer other coverage options such as group short-term disability insurance or a chronic illness rider. WAPA has been serving civilian federal employees for over 75 years. Get life insurance on your terms. Visit waepa.org for more information.
WAPA helps provide coverage today that will protect your tomorrow. Group term life insurance coverage is important to have while building your future. Whether you're saving to buy your first home, starting your first federal job, or beginning a family, establish your WAPA policy now, and you can carry it with you into retirement. WAPA has been ensuring the future of civilian federal employees for more than 75 years. Find coverage that fits your future by visiting waepa.org today.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here today with co-host John Elliott. John is a retired seminar presenter, retired Fed. And John Gillick, certified financial planner. And John and I, the two Johns and I, worked together in this company called NITP doing retirement seminars and the like and answering questions. And John Gillick thus far has been very pointed with regards to the sensitivity of taxation that people don't necessarily recognize. So if we push the needle a little bit to the right or the left, say potential and actual tax law changes that may impact your decisions. I would say the tax rates aren't, like you said, John, earlier, that they probably are not going to stay as low as they are. And for everybody listening, taxes are somewhat like walking upstairs. You walk into a building, you're at the lowest level. Well, you're at the lowest tax bracket. And you go into the next tax bracket, you're a little bit higher. So it's stair up, stair two. But once you're up there, that's where the taxes get particularly burdensome. Now, we get a lot for the tax dollars, so don't misunderstand me, but we're talking about finances here. So, John, right before we left for the break, where were we?
Well, we were actually kind of talking about the Secure Act and some changes there with rules, the 72 for the RMD, limiting of the stretch retirement account option over a lifetime, limiting it that to 10 years. And that's really kind of where I'm ramping off now with folks even in class to say, listen, there's been some significant changes in all directed at getting at your money and ultimately getting it away from maybe not just you at, you know, your later years of spending, but, you know, from your beneficiaries post-mortem, right? And not to scare anybody too badly, but, you know, you don't want to die with all the eggs in the basket of pre-tax, because if that happens now, and I use the example of the 30,000 plus people in federal service that have over $1 million, let's take the Fed whose spouse is pre-deceased them. They have one child, they pass away. They're let's just say they're 24% federal. Their beneficiary, them and their spouse are just knocking the cover off the ball. They're 37% federal. And boom, they get this $1 million inheritance, all pre-tax. And it used to be that the son or daughter could pull it out over their lifetime. The beneficiary could pull it over their lifetime if they were related. That is now being limited to 10 years. So how do you divide $1 million by 10, right? $100,000 a year, every year, at the 37% federal bracket, because once you're there, everything is taxed at 37. Oh, plus the state they live in.
Oh, the state. Yeah.
A big chunk too, right? So basically you're losing 45 cents on the dollar of mom or dad's TSP account to taxes. And that is tragic. And that's where I'm sitting with folks saying, you know, don't let that happen. If anything, stop adding to the TSP pre-tax now. If you have the ability to pay the tax now, you know what your taxes are. You can look at a tax table, pay it now, put it into the Roth TSP. And that's where folks, and it's interesting, you look at a class, I stop there and say, you do know there's no income limit on Roth TSP. And you'll have folks just sit up and go, you're kidding. You're wrong. You know what I mean? So that's where the you're wrong comes in, right, Bob?
Yep.
No, I'm right. There's no income limit on Roth TSP. And those folks know there's an income limit for them because they've surpassed it years ago on Roth IRA. And just to give you the numbers for 2021, if you're below 125,000 single or head of household, modified adjusted gross income, or below 198,000 modified adjusted gross income married, you can contribute to a Roth no problem. But if you're above those limits, you can't contribute at all. There's a phase out range, which not worth talking about that. Your tax software, your CPA will tell you what that number is. So most folks just stop there and go, oh, I've heard about Roth TSP, but I thought it wasn't for me because I make too much money. And when you tell them, no, you don't, not only do you not make too much money, you can make any amount, contribute to Roth TSP, and you can max it out, plus the taxes. So so the taxes have been taken out. You can still put, if you're over 50, 26,000 in after paying all the taxes. And it's interesting when I'm talking to folks that are nearing that retirement point, they go, we're going to do that. Well, yeah, because let's just say you've got a couple, he's maxing it out. If they maxed it out for two more years, they'd have over 100,000 in contributions to Roth. that, depending on how they have it invested, will start to double. 100 will double to 2 to maybe 4 to maybe 800,000 completely tax-free income, money that they can get to at some time later in life, and or then they can then hyper-focus on the taxable money, keep themselves in their tax bracket, take out more than they normally would, knowing that they're going to leave the Roth as future inheritance or for their later life money.
That's a good point. I had somebody, this was a long time ago, and they said, well, my friend got a raise and it put him into a higher tax bracket and they lost money. And I go, well, they didn't. They just paid more in tax. So John's discussion here, you give a little bit up front for a benefit a lot later on, because as that money grows, it stays in there. And then when it comes out, you don't pay taxes on it into retirement, near-term retirement, or they make you do something at 70 and a half.
That's correct. And this is a great example. And there's a myth, and I know I've done this with you before. If I haven't, I apologize. But as I'm teaching now, I just say, let's conceptually, let's talk about a federal couple that each makes $100,000, their FERS. They've been in service long enough to get one-third of their high three. They've maxed out Social Security. But their gross income is $200,000. And without doing standard deductions or itemizations, I said, just let's use $200,000. If each was maxing out TSP, that'd be $26,000 apiece. Their adjusted gross would be down to $148,000. That puts them solidly at 22% federal. The lower end of 22% federal is $80,251 in income. The upper end is $171,050, right? $171,050. Yeah. So I go, okay, so you're right in the middle of the bracket. And there's this myth that's been unleashed on us all year over year, federal, non-federal. When you retire, and you can say it with me, Bob, you will be in a lower tax. No, they never said lower taxes. They either said much lower or much, much lower tax bracket. That's how it was presented. And I just tell folks that's just not true. It's definitely not true for feds, because we take this same federal couple that now retired, if they get one third of their high three, that's $33,000 a piece, throw away the extra $3,000 a piece for the money that they put in for 25 years that they get back tax free, right? So that's $60,000. Plus they get their Social Security, that's probably another, because they maxed it out, probably another $60,000. They're at 120. They're already 40,000 above the lower limit for the 22% federal bracket. They didn't fall to 12%.
Right.
It's a myth. It's not going to happen. Oh, what about the $1 million they have saved up in TSP that they want to draw a 4% income from? That's $40,000. We add that to the 120. What are they at now, Bob? Drumroll.
160.
More money than they were being taxed on when they were working, maxing out TSP. So folks, when they hear that and they see the tax bracket and they see that I'm telling them the truth, listen, here's the tax table. And you look do with single folks, you know, married couples. I have not had one person in a class with NITP say, I'm going to fall to a much lower tax bracket, or I'm going to fall to a lower tax bracket. I had one person one time, she was taking deferred retirement, a deferred annuity. She goes, well, I am going to drop to 12, but it won't be for long. And then I'm going to get, as she said, hammered. Right.
Yeah.
So this myth that you're going to go along and you're going to see this big windfall when you stop working and start drawing your pre-tax TSP is just not true. And really, for folks that don't have pensions, it may be true, but how the heck are you going to support yourself in the Washington metro area or some other place in the country? You're going to need to keep spending the amounts you're spending pre-retirement. And so that's the interesting thing for me, is that folks just are discounting that completely. And in not only are you going to be in the same bracket you're in now, but which direction do you think taxes are going to go? We're at the lowest rate since 1950 with, a massive amount of federal debt and another almost $10 trillion going to be pumped into the system. It's going to go up on us all, not down. And so when you start looking at this Roth equation, meaning how much, when folks go, well, how much should I put in Roth? Well, the same thing my CPA said to me after whacking me with a large stick, well, max it out if you can.
Right.
I mean, switch your entire contribution over if you can. And for folks that have significant incomes in federal service, it's easy to figure out if you can do it. Call up OPM or go to your payroll system and move your entire contribution over to start after tax and see if you can, stomach the hit to your paycheck. It may not be as bad as you think.
Yeah, I do a simple little bar chart graph. The vertical axis is retirement income dollars. Bottom was years into retirement. And we all start off, there's a gap between our income and our taxable income because we get tax deductions. But then as that chart starts to show with COLAs and the like, or take come to you for good investment advice, the income is going up, but that other line, the deduction line, is going down. We don't have the mortgage we used to have. We might not even have a mortgage. We don't have the thrift deduction or not deduction. So we got our deductions going down at the same time the income is going up. And somebody says, well, what's that? I said, it's called taxable income. So it's a greater percentage of your overall income. And it's really not uncommon for people to fall into that trap. But one way to keep out of that trap, like John has mentioned, is Roth TSP, Roth IRA. And then you're not in the middle paying those higher taxes. And these are no longer these are consumption years. We're spending the money. We spent all the other time saving the money.
That's right.
So now we're going to take it out potentially and have more of a tax hit than it would be otherwise.
And I think, Bob, you had a question, I think, from a listener regarding the distribution phase. It's probably a good time to throw that one in here.
Okay, let me throw this out. Could you ask your guest regarding their thoughts on how best to tax manage the 59 and a half to age 72 time period, paren, the sweet spot before RMDs start. Now, this is before what John was talking about, the RMDs, for converting non-Roth TSP funds into a Roth IRA. So long story short, once we hit a certain age, is it time to, as John had mentioned before, to accelerate the money going into the Roth?
And it sounds like they're referring to Roth conversions. And so taking your pre-tax TSP and moving, they have to go to a traditional IRA first, and then they could be converted to Roth IRA from that point. And a lot of folks miss that piece of it. You can't roll directly out of TSP into a Roth IRA with pre-tax dollars. You have to go to a traditional IRA first, then do a Roth conversion. I would say it's a CPA question, and that's where your financial planner and your CPA get together. And you really want that horsepower behind those decisions, because there's going to be a cut line, and Bob would be the first one to say, yeah, where you could potentially knock yourself into a higher bracket. And if you're going from 24 to 32, Why hit yourself with an extra 8% in taxation? So, yeah, I think that if you were going to be out at 59 and a half or do your in-service distribution, your TSP 75 allows you to take out the vested balance of your TSP at 59 and a half, which is almost all of it, move it to an IRA traditional. It's a non-taxable event. It's actually, and Bob and I will go back and forth whether it's a rollover or transfer, but I'll just call it a rollover and leave it there for right now. But it's a non-taxable event, and then you could do Roth conversions from the traditional that you roll into yearly, keeping it under your current tax bracket, you know, making sure that, you know, you're not hitting yourself with additional taxation. But yeah, there's a lot of validity to that, because prior to 72, when they force you, and I love when folks say they force you, no, they're just telling you you're 72 and you may not have a ton of time left to enjoy this money that you saved up, right? So this whole idea of waiting till you're 72 just makes those Chinese finger handcuffs bigger and bigger and bigger. And I love this question, because here's someone that's, I'd say, pretty in tune saying, listen, I don't want to wait. I don't want to let this thing get bigger. Not only do I not want to wait, I want to convert this money that I put away now that, I'm in retirement. But again, I would caution them, you're not going to be in a lower tax bracket. I just went through that with a basic example of a married couple, same thing for single, because your pension plus the Social Security that will be taxable, 85% of what you receive for every Fed I've come into contact with is taxable. So of your Social Security, plus your TSP distributions are taxable, you're not going to be doing this at a lower tax bracket. And so, you know, just realize that the conversions, you know, whether you do them pre-retirement or post-retirement, are going to be taxed at the same level. So I like that question. There's a lot to it. We could spend an hour on that. I'm sure just alone, Bob. But I think you have a couple more questions.
We're going to take a break here, but let me read another question, and we'll just put that out before the break, and we'll talk about it after the break. With possible cuts at Social Security and higher taxes looming, which benefit should I dip into first? Social Security, traditional IRA, or Roth IRA at 62? Which would be more tax efficient? So let's chew on that. We'll listen to a spot for our NITP.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to the final leg of the show today. We're talking about taxes and investments. Investments first, I would say probably taxes second. And we left, I'm not going to read it again, with the possibility of cuts at Social Security Administration and higher taxes looming, et cetera, et cetera. John, either one, John Jay, when you meet with clients, when you talk to classes, I would say probably when you meet with clients, it's more focused than 30 people in a classroom. What's their aha moment? Is what we just talked about, what I just read, where they go, I get it now?
I'll tell you, Bob, it's pretty straightforward. And what I tell folks in classes and then demonstrate, you know, in person, you know, nowadays via Zoom is software. I mean, the software now that financial planners are running, and I just say to folks, listen, it's all proprietary. You're not going to find it on the web. The federal government's not going to provide it for free. Mint's not going to do it, or one of these online programs for you. But it's very complex. And when you take a Fed, and I'm going to do a Fed example, single Fed, where they were in the military. They have a military pension. They have disability income. They've got a TSP from the military. They've got TSP in civil service. They've got a pension, so it goes on and on, right? You have to have the ability to plug in each of those different streams of income, investment sources. If they're sitting in G fund in their old military TSP, we're not going to assign a rate above the rate of inflation for that thing, because for over a decade now, that's been the reality of the G fund. I mean, it's been performing it under 3% handily. And so we have to assign the right rates of return. At least I should say we know on this, as far as the three of us, first participants don't get the full rate of CPI. John Elliott, who I'm staring at on the screen, he gets CPI with the CSRS pension. First participants get the first, 2%? And they get cheated between 2 and 3, and they get everything above 3. Well, where do you think, inflation typically falls? It's somewhere between 2 and 3 in the nominal years. So you can't inflate a first pension like you do in software, CSRS pension at CPI. So with all that said, when someone says, hey, how do you answer this question with what do I attack first? We just do side-by-side comparisons where we take the Social Security at 62, at full retirement age at 70, and the software just quickly demonstrates a side-by-side comparison of, what's the better option. And what it normally comes down to, believe it or not, is folks looking at the screen going, okay, we could leave that much more for our beneficiaries. And that's the point at which they either care about their beneficiaries or they say, John, we've given them enough. This is our money. This is our time. We're going to spend it. And so it really comes down to also how they feel. I mean, are there any health issues? You know, tell me about your mom and dad and your grandparents. What did they, if they passed away, what ailed them? I mean, are you going to have the same thing? So there's a lot that goes into answering that question. But the beauty of software is that with all these different things plugged in, knowing someone's spending, we can easily generate those results to show someone the right way to do it. In the old days, it was more just of a conversation. You didn't have the software at that level, and you were, quite frankly, guessing to some point, logically guessing using fact and logic, right? Not emotion. But it depends, too, as you know. I mean, if you take it at 62, what happens if I go back to work as a contractor for 5 years, you know, 2 years out of the gate? You know, if I make too much money, I get a love letter from the Social Security Administration saying, give it back, you know? So there's a ton of things in there. And again, that's why I say to folks, as you're about to step over the threshold into retirement, if you don't have a financial planner, if you don't have a CPA and you don't have an attorney as your team, you're just costing yourself thousands, if not tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands in what I now refer to as lost opportunity. And you know, estate taxes, things like that, that didn't have to happen.
Interesting you say that. I don't profess to go into your world. I know enough to be dangerous. But so when I talk to somebody, I say, you know, from a financial standpoint, and I should not be the last word on this, this is how it works. But you also want to talk to the attorney with regards to wills, trusts, depending on, and generally you know the person, whether they have kids, grandkids, or the like. And, you know, the age-old Social Security, when do I start to claim it? Right. And let's do that one. To me, that's a little bit easier. So if you're dealing with clients, either one of the two Johns, what do people not get about Social Security? What do they not understand? Not necessarily the taxation of it, but the benefits of claiming it early, later, or latest.
Well, for Social Security, of course, the longer you wait to collect, the more money you get. So let's say if you're born between 43 and 54, your full retirement age is 66. It goes up gradually to 67 for those born 1960 or later. But yeah, you take it to 62. With a substantial age reduction. And once it's your full retirement age, wherever that is, depending on your birth, you get 100% of your Social Security benefit. But if you wait till age 70, you start getting 8% more a year prorated monthly added to your Social Security payment. So if your full retirement age is 66, you'd be getting 130. If you waited till 70, you'd be getting 132% of your benefit. Now, if you can wait that long, you don't need it to live on. Well, why wouldn't you do that? Well, one reason you might not do that is because maybe you're in ill health and you don't think you'll make it to the break-even point, which is roughly, depending on not factoring in COLAs, is about 82.
But a lot of people live beyond that. 15, right?
Yeah, a lot of people are living beyond that. Mm-hmm. So it's like you put your money down and takes your chance. But I waited till age 70 to collect my Social Security benefit because I don't even need a Social Security benefit. But so naturally, I said, well, I'm going to bet that I can survive past the break-even point in my early to mid-80s, depending on the rate of inflation, and yeah, therefore, which drives the COLAs. So that's a consideration. Now, if you're not age 70 and you're trying to decide, well, should I dip into my investments or my Social Security first? Well, I would think, and I'm not an expert, but just it would seem to me that if you can afford to wait till age 70 to collect your Social Security benefit, you should do that. And if you need money, take it from other sources.
Okay. We're running not close, but we're getting there's one question I wanted to ask it earlier, but I was so captivated by listening to John Jay that I didn't ask it. All righty. So what is the best way to combat an inflationary environment? Should I buy stocks? Should I buy an I bond? And more importantly, what's an I bond?
Well, they're inflation adjusted bonds, you know, that will go up with CPI. And it's funny, I had this conversation with a colleague of mine on Friday, and I'll be honest with you two guys, not that I'm not honest, but usually it doesn't sound good when you say that, right? There's several things that bug me right now. Number one, this cyber currency bubble we're in is going to be a catastrophic house of cards. Okay. Number two, there's been a massive materials disruption in this country that people don't know of. I just happen to work with a lot of folks in the trades, and I've got HVAC owners that can't get relays and switches and condensers and parts, and they can't get air conditioners, and they have to call up the supplier before they can quote you the job. I know someone that fixes tractor trailers, they can't get sheet aluminum from the three major suppliers they've always got it from. When asking about an I-beam for a trailer to repair, they said, well, you're not going to get that. So you have this, I went to Home Depot, 73 to 75 bucks for one sheet of plywood. There's some things happening. You have all these folks defer their mortgages, and they deferred their car loans, and they deferred their credit cards that are going to have the have to pay it. Moment coming up here, and my understanding is in June and August. So there's a massive amount of money coming. That money is going to dump into the economy. It's going to fuel demand at a level I don't believe that we've seen since the Reagan years when he was, you know, going after Russia, right, the Cold War. So when I hear all across every news channel, every you know, political side, you know, worries of inflation, that tells you two things. It's going to happen, right? It's not two things. It's one thing. It's going to happen. So it's hard for me to sit in inflation like a TIPS account, inflation protected securities. It's a good place to be if you want to be on the bond side of things, but the stock side is going to go up. And what I say to folks is, you know, you probably want to get better than the rate of inflation, because if inflation comes in high single digits and even tips over into the low, like, you know, 10, 12, 14% range, you're going to have to be making a lot of money with your investments to keep up with it. And so you have this double-edged sword right now. There's really no right way to do it. And you have some things low on the horizon that really aren't, you know, on the mainstream media that I'm seeing that, you know, concern me.
Well, also, if you're a federal employee and or retiree and getting a pension, you would be able to, it seems to me, and what my financial advisor pointed out to me, which he didn't have to, but he did, that you can be more aggressive because you'll have your FERS annuity and your Social Security, or if you're CERS only, which are still a sizable number of retirees. You have a very generous pension, so you can afford to take more risks with your investments, which, and chances are, we hope, gives you a higher yield going forward. And just practicing on myself, I've found that to be true. I've always been fairly aggressive investor anyway, but I can afford to be as well. So I would definitely follow that path.
It is tough to do because there's a lot of chatter. I kind of left out the housing bubble, right? So there's a lot of things happening right now. And I'm with John. I mean, invariably with $10 trillion, almost $10 trillion that should be pumped into the economy, you know, where does that money go? It goes to companies that you're investing in the C fund and the S fund, and, you know, the I fund, because some of it's going overseas. There'd be a tremendous amount of money to be made in the stock market as this money deploys. But that doesn't mean you're not going to go through multiple corrections and hit some, you know, stumbling blocks along the way.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, cautionary tale for everybody, always be diversified, especially in retirement.
Well, sure. Yeah. I'm not totally in the market, but I'm mostly in the market.
Yeah, because you can be. And I absolutely agree with you. Yeah.
And people have to remember in the housing bubble burst in 2008, you know, stocks plummeted. We all know that. Your investments, your TSP investment and so forth went crashing to the floor. But it's amazing how quickly it rebounded. Starting in like March of 2009, the stock market started going gangbusters. So if you'd bailed out saying, well, I'm not going to be in the market anymore,
right,
screw that, you really screwed yourself. Yeah. Because, you know, I knew that and I stayed the course.
Guys, Andrew tells me we have about a minute left. So final comments, please.
Final comment for me, Bob, very easy. I see that across the board from entry-level feds all the way through folks that are nearing retirement, absolute contribution to Roth TSP. There's no income limitation. To not leave yourself with a bucket of tax-free money in retirement to combat higher taxes, which we will see, I think is a tragic mistake, especially for folks that have the wherewithal to be able to make it happen.
John?
Take a retirement seminar, take advantage of the calculators, the TSP calculator. There's even, I noticed on the TSP website, a calculator comparing a Roth to a traditional TSP account.
All right.
So that would be a good idea to do those two things.
Guys, John Gillick, how does somebody contact you?
You can reach me at Trader John J. That's Trader, TraderJohn, the letter J, at gmail.com. And I'm more than happy to answer any follow-up questions anyone may have.
All righty. Very good. Thank you, both Johns. I'm taking notes because and I'm going to pass it along. Anyway, Andrew says you better shut up because you're going to get cut off. So thanks for being here. And folks, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.